Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. On today's program, you will hear stories from John Russell and Katie Weaver. Brian Lynn tells us about rocks found on Mars in this week's science report. We close with the next part of The Making of a Nation. But first, here's John Russell.
Researchers recently examined an unusual coral reef that was discovered near Tahiti in the South Pacific Ocean. The reef is thought to be one of the largest found at such depths and seems untouched by climate change or human activities. The newly found reef stretches 3 kilometers. It was studied late last year during a dive supported by UNESCO. Unlike most of the world's mapped corals, which are found in shallow waters, this one was deeper, between 35 meters to 70 meters. Such depths are difficult to explore. The deeper a diver goes underwater, the shorter the amount of time he or she can safely spend at each depth. The dive team had special air tanks and did 200 hours of diving to study the reef. The team took photographs, measurements, and samples of the corals. Corals are tiny animals that grow and form reefs in oceans around the world. The reef is in a place where many researchers have not spent a lot of time, said Mark Eakin, formerly of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. We'll be seeing more of these discoveries as the technology is applied to these locations, said Eakin. We may find some bigger ones somewhere, but I think this is always going to be an unusual reef. Laetitia Edouin said she first saw the corals months earlier with a local diving group that was on a recreational dive. Recreational is a term that means done for enjoyment. When I went there for the first time, I thought, wow, we need to study that reef. There's something special about that reef, said Edouin. She is a researcher at the French National Center for Scientific Research in Mouria, French Polynesia. Edouin noticed that the corals looked healthy and did not appear to be affected by a bleaching event in 2019. A bleaching event is when corals lose their colors and turn white. Around the world, coral reefs have been damaged from overfishing and pollution. Climate change is also hurting corals, including those in areas near the newly discovered reef. Between 2009 and 2018, 14% of the world's corals were killed, says a 2020 report by the Global Coral Reef Monitoring Project. The recent volcanic explosion in Tonga that created large waves across the Pacific has not affected the reef off Tahiti, said Edouin. Edouin hopes the recent research can help experts understand why the reef has not been damaged by climate change and human activities. She also hopes scientists can better understand what part these deeper corals might play in the ocean. More dives are planned in the coming months. Julien Barbière is the head of UNESCO's Marine Policy and Regional Coordination. Barbière said, "We know very little about the ocean, and there's still so much that needs to be recorded, needs to be measured." I'm John Russell.
The American lobster industry has greatly slowed down because of trade difficulties linked to the COVID-19 pandemic. But those issues have not done much to slow China's love for lobster. The demand rose during the 2010s, in part because of the expansion of China's middle class. Lobsters are especially desired in China during the winter. The tasty sea creatures are often eaten on Chinese New Year, which will be celebrated this year on February 1st. American exporters sent more than 6 million kilograms of lobster to China during the first 11 months of 2021, the Associated Press reports. This was a 6% increase over the same period in 2020. The pandemic has made the already hard job of sending live seafood across the world even more difficult. But Maine lobster exporters are expecting a good amount of business for Chinese New Year, Bill Bruns told the AP. Bruns oversees the lobster company in Arundel, Maine. He said the shipping process is more difficult now because the company cannot send lobsters directly to Beijing because of COVID-19 restrictions. But they are still able to send lobsters to other airports, such as Shenzhen. Chinese New Year was always a crapshoot the last couple years, Bruns said, but I'm prepared for it. I have the staff, because otherwise it's going to be a long spring. China buys lobsters from the U.S., where the industry is mostly based in Maine, as well as Canada. Exports from Canada were up even more than the U.S. during the first 11 months of 2021, said John Sacton. He is an industry expert and the creator of SeafoodNews.com. Sacton said the seafood industry could also gain business from the Beijing Winter Olympics, which are set to begin February 4th. And he said he expects lobster sales during the Chinese New Year to be higher than last year. The U.S. lobster industry had similar difficulties during the first year of the pandemic in 2020. But companies still reported a strong export season during that year. While the value of exports in 2020 was down from a record year in 2018, it still added up to more than $100 million. High lobster prices have raised the value of exports this year. Business publisher Erner Berry reported the price for a live 1.25-pound hard-shell lobster was $11.25 per pound in New England this month. That was more than one-third higher than in January 2021. To send lobsters to China, American and Canadian fishermen have to trap them in the cold waters of the Atlantic Ocean. Bad weather has made that difficult in Maine this year. But fishermen are still having a productive winter on the water, said Kristen Porter. He is president of the Maine Lobstermen's Association. When guys get out there, they are doing okay, Porter said. He added, it takes someone hardier than me to fish the wintertime. I'm Katie Weaver. Thank you.
A new study has found that rock material collected on Mars contains the same kinds of carbon signals linked to living organisms on Earth. Scientists say the presence of carbon may suggest evidence of ancient biological life on Mars. But they also note that the finding could be related to non-biological processes. The study is based on rock samples collected by the American Space Agency NASA's Curiosity Explorer. The Explorer, or rover, landed on Mars in 2012. It has been exploring areas around the planet's Gale crater. The rover used a robotic arm to collect rock material from below the surface of Mars. The samples were subjected to high heat inside a chemistry laboratory on Curiosity, NASA explained. This resulted in a release of gas from the rock material. One of the rover's instruments then measured isotopes from carbon released during the heating process. Results of the experiment were examined by scientists on Earth. Their findings were recently reported in a study in Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Carbon is an important element because it is present in all life on Earth. Carbon has two naturally occurring isotopes, 12 and 13. Measuring these isotopes can provide researchers with signals about carbon-related activities from the past. The study found that the collected samples had large amounts of carbon-12. This kind of carbon is used by living creatures on Earth to get energy from food or the sun, NASA noted. Christopher House is a Curiosity scientist based at Pennsylvania State University. He led the study. House said in a statement that on Earth, processes that would produce the carbon signal we're detecting on Mars are biological. He added, "We have to understand whether the same explanation works for Mars, or if there are other explanations, because Mars is very different." The biological explanation involves the idea that bacteria may have released methane gas into the atmosphere. Ultraviolet light could have converted this gas into larger, more complex molecules that settled on the surface. These molecules could have remained in the Martian rocks collected by Curiosity. In 2019, NASA researchers reported that Curiosity had measured levels of methane on the surface of Mars. While the team said this could also be a sign of ancient life, NASA has not been able to confirm whether the methane resulted from biological causes. Two other theories, both non-biological, are identified in the new study. One explanation suggests the carbon signals might have resulted from an interaction of ultraviolet light and carbon dioxide gas in the Martian atmosphere. This process could have produced carbon-containing molecules that settled on the surface. The other theory is that the carbon could have resulted from an event hundreds of millions of years ago. In that event, the solar system passed through a huge cloud of dust that could have been rich in the kind of carbon discovered in the rock samples. All three explanations fit the data, House said. We simply need more data to rule them in or out. Andrew Steele is a curiosity scientist based at the Carnegie Institution for Science in Washington, D.C. He noted that Curiosity is the first rover to be equipped with the tools to study carbon isotopes on the surface of Mars. Defining the carbon cycle on Mars is absolutely key to trying to understand how life could fit into that cycle, Steele said. We have done that really successfully on Earth, but we are just beginning to define that cycle for Mars, he added. I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History, in VOA Special English. There was one main issue in America's presidential election of 1916. That issue was war. Europe was in the middle of what is now remembered as World War I. It was the bloodiest conflict the world has ever known. Most Americans wanted no part of the struggle in Europe. They supported their country's official position, neutrality. This desire was the main reason President Woodrow Wilson won re-election. People gave Wilson their votes because they hoped he would continue to keep America out of the war. Larry West and Morris Joyce tell more about the presidency of Woodrow Wilson.
Like most Americans, Woodrow Wilson did not want war. He feared that entering the conflict would cost the United States many lives. Wilson read the reports from European battlefields. The news was unbelievably terrible. By the end of 1916, several million men had been killed, wounded, or captured. At the Battle of Verdun, French forces stopped a German attack. The cost was high on both sides. More than 700,000 soldiers were killed, wounded, or captured. The Battle of the Somme followed. Britain lost 60,000 men on the first day. By the time the battle was over, losses for both sides totaled more than a million. Germany also was at war on its eastern border with Russia. Losses on that battlefront, too, totaled more than a million men.
At the time of America's presidential election in 1916, Germany seemed to be winning the war. Its losses were terrible. But the losses of its enemies, the Allies, were even worse. German forces occupied much of northern France and almost all of Belgium. German and Austrian soldiers also held parts of Russia, Italy, Romania, and Serbia. Germany was winning on the battlefield. The Allies were winning at sea. A British blockade cut off almost all German trade with the rest of the world. Even food shipments were blocked. As a result, Germany faced mass starvation. It urgently needed to break the blockade and get food.
This situation finally forced Germany to make the decision that would bring the United States into the war. It decided to use its submarines to break the British blockade. The submarines would attack any ships that came near Britain or other parts of Europe. This included ships from neutral countries, like the United States. Earlier, Germany had made a promise to the United States. Its submarines would not attack civilian ships unless warning was given and the lives of those on the ships were saved. Now Germany was withdrawing that promise. It said unrestricted submarine warfare would begin immediately. German ruler Kaiser Wilhelm said, "If Wilson wants war, let him make it, and let him then have it."
President Wilson immediately broke diplomatic relations with Germany. He still hoped the two nations would not go to war. He left that decision to Germany. If German submarines sank American ships, Wilson would have no choice but to declare war. Most American shipping companies feared attack by German submarines. Throughout the early part of 1917, they kept their ships in home ports. They wanted protection. So, they asked for permission to arm their ships. At first, President Wilson refused to seek such permission from Congress. He did not want to do anything that might cause Germany to declare war. Then, he received secret news from Britain. British agents had gotten a copy of a telegram from Germany's foreign minister to Germany's ambassador in Mexico. The telegram said Germany was planning hostile acts against the United States. Wilson acted quickly. He began putting guns and sailors on American trade ships.
It did not take long for the worst to happen. Within days, a German submarine sank an unarmed American ship, the Algonquin. Then three more American ships were sunk. Many lives were lost. President Wilson no longer had a choice between war and peace. There would be war. Wilson called a special session of Congress. Members of both the Senate and House of Representatives gathered in one room. They stood as the president walked quickly to the front. He stood silent for a moment before speaking. This is what he said.
"Fully understanding the serious step I am taking, I advise that the Congress declare the recent acts of the German government to be, in fact, nothing less than war against the United States." It is a fearful thing to lead this great, peaceful people into war. But right is more precious than peace. And we will fight for the things which we have always carried nearest our hearts. For democracy, for the rights and liberties of small nations, and for the belief that a worldwide union of free people can bring peace and safety to all nations.
President Wilson's emotional speech brought tears to the eyes of many of the lawmakers. They felt the great seriousness of his request. Outside, crowds lined the street to cheer Wilson as he returned to the White House from the Capitol building. He sat in his car and shook his head sadly. "Think of what it is they are cheering," he said. "My message today was a message of death for our young men. How strange it seems they would cheer that." On April 6th, 1917, Congress approved a declaration of war against Germany.
The Allies, Britain, France, and Russia, welcomed American involvement. The war was going badly for them. It had been very costly in lives, money, and supplies. Allied shipping was suffering heavy losses from German submarine attacks. A British naval blockade had greatly reduced food shipments to Germany. Now, Britain itself faced dangerously low supplies of food. Allied representatives went to Washington to explain what the Allies needed. They needed supplies, especially food, immediately. They needed money to pay for the supplies. They needed ships to get the supplies from America to Europe. And they needed American soldiers.
President Wilson and Congress worked together to organize the United States for war. Congress gave Wilson new wartime powers. He soon formed a council to build ships, improve industrial production, and control national transportation. He formed an agricultural agency to increase food production and food exports. And he formed an information committee to build public support for the war. Wilson's efforts succeeded. The Allies quickly got the ships, supplies, and money they requested. Most important, they soon got American soldiers.
Allied military leaders said only about 500,000 troops were needed from the United States. But American officials decided to build a much larger army. Before long, large numbers of American soldiers were crossing the Atlantic Ocean. They would fight the Germans at the western battlefronts of Europe. The extra strength they gave the Allies would play a major part in helping defeat Germany.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan.